We on? Now then, Ray Winston here. The real one. Close enough. Doing a new podcast with me mate Tony. Soprano, that is.
Oh, how you doing?
Talking all the big stuff. Birds, scraps, films.
And of course, men's mental health. With studio guests such as arch feminist and top broad Deborah Francis White and disgraced scumbag comedian Dapper Laughs.
Something for everyone. We're trying to be better men, ain't we, Tone?
That's right. We're bad boys done good.
Available on YouTube and to download on all good audio platforms. Go on, get off your hands, you dopey c***.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to another edition of your favourite podcast, Insane in the Membrane.
Insane in the Membrane.
Hello everybody, welcome to the show. Lovely to have you back. Hope you're well, as I always say, and I genuinely mean that. I hope you're good. Those storms a few weeks ago were battering the place. I hope we're all better now. Got our fences back up. Good. Well, before we get stuck in, we've got a bit of admin, as we always have to do, and become a Patreon. I'm going to get straight in. I don't like to ask, but I'm going to. We'd like you to become a Patreon. We've got some wonderful Patreons already that help us keep the lights on. We could do with a few more. If you're up for that, to become a Patreon, you'll get early access to some of our biggest episodes. So all you've got to do is just head to our Patreon page, which is patreon.com/membranepodcast, and you can pledge what you want, and like we say, you get access to, early access to our episodes. We let you know when there's going to be special things happening. Head to patreon.com/membranepodcast. Also, check out our stylish Insane in the Membrane t-shirts from buythatmerch.co.uk. That's Mark and Stacey, the lads behind SOS Clothing, those wonderful boys, ethically sourced, vegan friendly. They've now branched out. They've got their this is taking care of like band merch, podcast merch. There's comedians on there. They're really taking care of business. And they've got some. What they're doing now? Got some smashing colours now. Where we used to have the gold one, now we've got red. We've got green. We've got grey, black, white. So go and check that out. That's Insane in the Membrane t-shirts from buythatmerch.co.uk, and tell them that we sent you. Thank you very much. Also, don't forget to check out the episode notes each week for links to our merch and our YouTube channel and our guests, including today's guest. Now, we were lucky enough to do Insane in the Membrane live at the Latitude Festival last year. It was a big moment for us because, you know, the Latitude Festival, it had been, you know, this was just after the lockdowns and we weren't sure if it was going to be on. I think this was like a tester festival as well to see how things could progress going forward, you know, now that sort of COVID is amongst us. So it was a real honour and a privilege to be asked to go and do Latitude Festival, which is, I think it's one of my favourite festivals. So producer Paul and I trotted down, I think it's in Suffolk, we trotted up to Suffolk, sorry, to do the festival. Producer Paul got absolutely bollocks the night before. Absolutely shit-faced, and so was a quivering wreck the next day when we did it on stage. But he got us through it. He soldiered through. Bless him. He's a good lad. And we had a really good time. We had a packed-out tent. We couldn't get a guest because all the guests, no one was there yet. We sort of did it. We were like midday on the first day, so there weren't really anyone around. But we ended up doing it ourselves, and we had a really good time. Everybody that was there was brilliant. And if you were there, fantastic. Thank you very much, because you really were a fantastic crowd. And after we did the show, we were met by a guy called Chris Lee. And he came up and he said, he said he enjoyed it, which is always nice to hear. And then he started telling us about men's sheds. And, you know, I was interested. I'm like, well, what's that then? And he told me. He said, it's where, you know, men go along and they, you know, they fix things, they have a chat. But basically, fundamentally, the important bit is that they open up and they start, you know, they open up to each other and have a chat. And that's one thing that men, especially the older generation, need to do, is open up more. So it's a safe space for them to do that. And I was like, yeah, that's fantastic. Why don't you come on the podcast and have a chat? And so back and forth, we got there in the end, and there he is. So coming up in a minute, it's Chris Lee.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A podcast from producer Paul.co.uk.
Insane in the Membrane.
I've just been having a conversation with a comedian, Callie Beaton, and we were talking about men, and we were talking about how men talk to each other, and men, like, men tend to not talk to each other face to face. We've got to be doing something.
Yeah.
And we talked about that, and I was like, yeah, you're right. And it really reminded me of the conversation you and I have had.
Yeah.
About what you're doing with the men's sheds.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic. And it was really good. So how did this come about, Chris?
Well, it's really just what you were saying there about men doing stuff together, because there's a saying that comes from Australia where men's sheds originated, that men don't talk face to face, they talk shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah.
And I was pointing out this to somebody else on radio, and they said, oh yeah. And I find that when I go walking with people, I talk about slightly different things in a more relaxed way. So I think it's generally that when we're not looking face to face at somebody, we might actually talk a bit more freely.
Yeah.
But I got into men's sheds in the same week, about 8 or 9 years ago, in the same week on Twitter, I discovered about men's sheds, and I discovered about repair cafes. And repair cafes are like cousins to men's sheds. Community repair events. So I like both ideas. So I brought them together in creating something called the Repair Shed, long before the repair shop existed.
Right. Yeah.
I set up a repair shed down in Hemel Hempstead, which is the other corner of Hertfordshire from where I live. And that was 8 years ago, and it's still going well.
Brilliant.
And they've now branched out. They've got another site in a school where it's a brilliant arrangement. They provide all the maintenance for the school in return for using the fully equipped workshop that the school has got. And just as a classic example of problem-solving brains, it's a special needs school.
Okay.
And they've got a wheelchair lift to raise people in wheelchairs up about 3 foot. And the guys came in. We call ourselves shedders. So the shedders came in. And the first thing the school said to them was, we've got a panic on. Can you make us a wooden ramp? So they said, why? They said, because the wheelchair lift is broken and we need to raise people up. And the guy said, why wouldn't we mend it? So half an hour later, it was fixed. Amazing. And they'd saved the school £1,000 in an emergency call-out fee. Oh,
that's fantastic.
And instead of building a useless ramp, they'd actually just fixed the problem. And it's just, to my mind, it's all about, if you've got that sort of a brain, you don't think about, you know, you want to sort it out for good. You don't want to just pass around, you know, doing sort of temporary measures.
Yeah.
So they've got a great relationship with the school, and they're keeping a chart of all the money they're saving the school by having them doing the work for them instead. And I think, to be honest, the school appreciates that.
Yeah.
And obviously there's a good community connection between older guys and the younger people in the school. So the intergenerational stuff is there.
Brilliant.
As well.
That's the thing. It's the older generation that, we're all starting the conversation now about, you know, looking after your mental health and, you know, but there's the older generation that didn't have that. Like, I know my dad didn't have that. And it's only very recently he started to tell me about his upbringing. I knew bits and bobs, but he's only really started going into detail very recently. I mean, he's 75, 76. But I remember growing up, like, you know, the bonnet of the car would always be up, or dad would be under the car.
Yeah.
And the neighbours, the other fellas, would just congregate around the car and either helping him out, or even, not even that, they'd just be sat, they'd be stood around the car drinking tea, but they'd all be chatting.
Yeah.
And I do remember that. And so this, and it, and when you, and like with the shedders doing that, they might, that, what people don't really understand is that that gives you, that in, that improves your mental health vastly. Yeah. Because you're helping people, and I think that's what that's such a wonderful thing.
And it's the payback, it's the reward. I'm of a generation which, obviously, you know, I haven't retired yet, but it's not far off. And through my work with, I set up the repair cafe here where I live, and I say to guys, where did you learn all about electrics? Because I don't know about electrics, and they said, well, doesn't everybody know about electrics? Well, I said, no. My dad was into woodworking, so I do furniture repairs and I did woodworking, but he wasn't into electrics. But people, I'm surrounded by people of my age who just automatically grew up knowing how to fix electrical stuff.
Yeah.
So it makes me feel quite inadequate. And that's really one of the great things about Men's Sheds is the learning that goes on within the shed between the guys, because everybody knows something slightly different, and they don't have, you know, you don't have to have a particular skill to get involved. But it's interesting, the origin of Men's Sheds from Australia, where they've got 1,000 sheds, was that it was started because after the Vietnam War, apparently it was a very unpopular war in Australia. So the veterans that came back expected to be greeted as heroes, but they weren't.
No.
And they actually were shunned, and they retreated to the bush. They literally went into the bush.
Right.
And as they came out, they gathered in sheds because they'd got the shared experience of war. That obviously a lot of them were suffering from trauma.
Mm.
And the only people who understood what they were going through was each other. And that's where Men's Sheds came from. And gradually they came back into society. So, you know, there are quite a lot of sheds in the UK that are connected with veterans, you know, who, and the other thing about it is that this is to do with work as much as anything. If your life revolves having a uniform on, when you lose your uniform, that's when you lose status. And even a business suit is status.
Mm.
And the higher you are up in the organisation, the more you lose it when you actually are no longer in the organisation.
Yeah.
And if you've had somebody else to do, a PA to do all your IT for you, you come out of your job and you're absolutely bereft because you don't even know how to use a computer.
Exactly that.
They're as vulnerable. People high up in organisations are as vulnerable when they retire as are people in uniforms. And somebody suggested to me, although I've never found the evidence, that posties have quite a higher level of mental ill health when they retire. A, because they haven't got a uniform. B, because they're weird days, you know, their shift.
Oh, yeah, of course.
They're crazy. But also they're well connected with the community when they're posties. But when they get rid of their uniforms and their status and their role, that's when they really suffer. So men's sheds really is. And when I was in setting up the men's shed in Hemel Hempstead, I had this idea that you should second, a business should second the guys who are going to be retire or made redundant. They should be seconded to a shed for 6 months before they retire, so that when they do retire, they've got this network of people they can plug into.
Yeah, that's great.
But anyway, so too many ideas and too little time.
But there is that thing, like going back to what you were saying about not knowing how to do things. I know I'm as guilty as a lot of men. We're scared to say that we don't know a thing. We'd rather bodge it and you know, blag it a little bit rather than say, yeah, I don't know how to do that, you know? Yeah. And I guess in that environment, that's what you need, is that environment, like the shed, to go, yeah, I don't know, I've never done that before. Yeah. How does that work? And
it's because you feel comfortable with the people you're with. You don't mind admitting it. I had a conversation with, we've got a local domestic appliance shop near here, and the guy, and I said, who's your favourite customer? He says, women who don't think they know how to fix things, because... I said, otherwise, what happens is the washing machine goes and the husband partner says, don't worry, darling, I'll fix it. So, of course, they can't bloody fix it.
Yeah.
And then they say, oh, no, it can't be mended. And the answer is, it could have been mended, but after they've messed around with it, it can't be mended. So they don't want the you know, the well-meaning partners to go anywhere near the bloody washing machine. Otherwise, they're going to leave it worse than it was. But, yeah, so it is about having the confidence to say, I don't know, but I'd like to learn, sort of thing. I think that's the essence of what, because a men's shed, just to state the bleeding obvious, is a sort of a communal space for men, but it's not exclusively for men.
No.
It's not necessarily a shed. And we could talk about where some of the sheds are located at some stage. But I think the big thing about it is, you could be doing this stuff in your own shed, but it's not the same as doing it with somebody else. And the main element is that learning element, where actually you get two brains that are sort of firing on slightly different planes and they come together and fix it. And also it's more fun to get somebody else involved in what you're doing and helping and this, that, and the other.
Absolutely.
So I think it's the old shoulder to shoulder thing.
Yeah. Well, I remember a mate of mine, Michael, and I said to him, I was having some issues with my youngest lad. You know, he was going through puberty and he just, you know, we weren't really connecting. And every time we were around each other, we'd just bang up against each other. And he said, why don't you go and just go and get a bag of chips and go and sit by a pond and just sit there and eat your chips and, you know, just have a, you know, just watching the ducks go by and all that. And he was right. We were sat in the car. And where he lived in Gravesend, we sort of pulled up in the car. We were right by the Thames, right by watching all the ships coming in and out. And we just sort of sat there eating chips and watching the ships coming in. And it was a really nice moment. You know, we weren't in an environment just going, right, I want you to tell me what's going on. We were just doing something else. And from that, we suddenly started talking about, you know, the issues we were having and what was annoying each other about each other. And that's what you need, isn't it? It's just a safe environment where you don't feel... It's almost like you're distracted from it, aren't you? And that's the essence of the sheds.
One of the guys... I mentioned about the different locations for sheds.
Mm.
And one of them is up... There's a place called Nairn, which is near Inverness. And it's actually... They have their shed on platform 2 of the station.
Right.
The station's open. So they've got their shed there. And I was talking to the guy who runs it, and he was saying, obviously, during lockdown, there was a lot of problem of isolation and such like. And they used to have a weekly Zoom meeting, which was just a chance for people to meet. And he said, he asked one of the guys who didn't really contribute much but just sat there listening. And he said, you know, he took him on one side and asked him if there was anything wrong. And the guy said, No, there's nothing wrong. I just, I like looking at people. I like seeing smiling faces. I like hearing what they've got to say, but I don't feel a need to make a contribution.
Right.
So, it's not all about talking. It's sometimes about listening. And even in our repair shed down in Hemel, there was a guy there. Anybody in sheds can be any age, but he was probably about 40, a guy called Danny, and he was long-term unemployed. And after 6 months, one of the guys came up to me and he said, Danny's just found his voice. So he'd been there for 6 months. He'd been doing stuff. He'd been turning up every day and whatever. And it took 6 months for him just to feel able to say what he thought or in and stuff. And the brilliant thing is that everybody's got the patience to allow people to do stuff at their own pace and, develop at their own pace. So it's, it's quite open.
That's the thing. And we need to feel accepted. And then that's when we start to come out of ourselves. I know that I used to play comedians football. So we'd meet up on a Tuesday. It's still going.
Yeah.
And it's not serious. We'd all just turn up. We'd turn up at Crystal Palace and I remember going there, and the first few times I went, I was quite quiet. I kind of sort of said hello to the people that I knew, but basically, just played football with the guys, and then I'd go home, and I felt really bad. I was like, oh God, I'm going, but no one's talking to me. I don't know what to do. And then one day they just started talking to me, and they go, oh Rich, nice one, good to see you. And it was just that. It was that, and that's all it took. It was a really nice moment, and I imagine that was the same with Danny.
Yeah.
He just found his feet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And the other thing, obviously, is, and this is okay, this is traditional, but it does actually happen in sheds. Men talking about their health. And before I set up the repair shed, I went to Milton Keynes, which is one of the oldest and probably one of the biggest sheds. And I was sitting there waiting to see the guy who was I was meant to be meeting. And there was a guy behind me. This was just in a room where they were drinking coffee. And there was a guy behind me talking about his bowel cancer. He wasn't talking to me, he was just talking about it. And I thought, he's a plant. He's obviously been told to go into the tea room and talk about his bowel cancer. Because, I thought, wow, this is what I've been told happens, but it's actually happening. And then it happened to me a little bit towards the end of my time with the repair shed, because there was this guy called Gary. And I heard him before I saw him, and he was huffing and puffing coming up the stairs, and he came round the door, and I said, "How's things, Gary?" So he said, "Not so good." So I said, "Oh, what's the problem?" And he said, "I've got a note written down here: Gary's testicles," because he said my balls are aching. So I said, oh, "Okay. Any particular reason?" And he said, a couple of weeks ago I had a hernia. So I said, a hernia operation.
Right.
So I said, oh, well, I've had a double hernia operation, get up on it. And he said, ever since then, my balls have been aching. Do you think that's normal? I said, I don't know what normal is. Because obviously, if you've never had a hernia, you'd never know what it, or you never know what it is. So I said to him, if my balls were aching 2 weeks after an operation, I'd at least want to tell my doctor about it.
Yeah.
So I heard him that afternoon, and he was on the phone to the doctor, and I saw him 2 weeks later, and I said, Harry, how are you getting on, Gary? Are your balls still aching? He said, yeah, but at least the doctor knows. And the point is, he didn't know what was normal. I didn't know what was normal. And once I'd actually pointed out, well, it's bleeding obvious, just ask somebody for advice.
Yeah.
You did. But you need to, it's the sort of thing men don't talk about.
But that's it, isn't it? That's the problem. Yeah. We don't. Yeah. And we it's not about manning up, but you just kind of go, I don't want to trouble anyone with it. I'm sure it's fine. So, you leave it. And as you get older, obviously bits start to drop off and start to hurt in a weird way. Suddenly you've got marks on you that weren't there before. And I've just got I've got this thing on my cheek, and I think we don't know. I'm going to go and get it looked at, but for ages I was kind of like fit. I'm like, I don't know what that is, but I'll grow my beard a bit more and just cover it up. And someone said to me the other day, like, Rich, mate, that looks really angry. Go and see someone. You go, yeah, I will do. But I was just doing that thing of, I don't want to trouble anyone. I'll let it. I'll just see what happens.
But I think there's a role for women, because I know this is gross generalization. And like I said, men's sheds are not necessarily men only.
No.
It varies. And even in Australia, where obviously there's the Australian way of doing things, women are involved in sheds in pretty much one way or another. Mm. But as I said earlier, there's this thing about men feeling more comfortable talking to other men. I actually don't necessarily agree with it, because when I left the repair shed in Hemel, we had 25 members and three women. And I reckon that if a guy was feeling a bit bad, he'd come in the morning. It would be one of the women who'd take him on one side and say, things aren't quite right, are they? But whereas the men would just go on for weeks on end, and somebody would say, oh, you know, where's John? Well, he wasn't, you know. And, yeah. So I think, and of course, the traditional thing is that women do, they're the people who push men to go and see the doctor and this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
And actually, they're also the people who push men into sheds, because there's a thing called the underfoot syndrome, which is that the woman has got her home all organized, and then the man gets made redundant or retires, and he comes and messes the whole thing up. I had an experience of that, because down in Hemel, we were, I don't know if you know Hemel, there's a place called the Magic Roundabout.
Yes.
But yeah. Well, we were about 300 yards from the Magic Roundabout, and we were near a B&Q DIY store. And that was a brilliant place for recruiting people who might want to come to the shed. So I was explaining to the B&Q manager what our shed was all about. And I walked out to give out leaflets to the people coming into B&Q. And I walked back to my car, and a guy comes up and he says, I think you've just described a thing for old fogies like me. So I said, oh, what's your situation? He says, well, I'm a taxi driver, and I'm going to retire in 2 years, and my wife's worried what I'm going to do when I retire. So, you know, she was the one who was thinking ahead on his behalf.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
and pushing him to find something to do, so he wasn't going to get under her feet. So it's, so I think I give quite a lot of talks about men's sheds, and often there are a lot of women in the audience, and they say, sorry, we're here sort of thing. You know, we're just interested to know. And I say, I'm not sorry, because women get the idea of men's sheds long before men do.
Yeah,
so well, it's usually the woman who, as I say, pushes them in. And again, what I was told when I was at Milton Keynes was that there was a woman, and it's like a second childhood. She was driving her husband in, and he was crossing his arms, sitting in the passenger seat, saying, I'm not going to enjoy it, not going to enjoy it, I'm not going to enjoy it. And she pushes him into this shed, and then it's like taking him into nursery. Because she came back at the end of the day, she couldn't get him out because he'd made all these friends and he'd found all these toys to play with.
Yeah, yeah, so, yeah.
But what he needed was somebody to push him in there,
yeah,
just to give it a go. Most, as I say, most men find their way to a shed because of a woman. It might be a daughter, it might be a partner, it might be whatever. But they get it far easier and far quicker than men do. So.
Yeah.
So I'm quite happy to talk to women about men's sheds, because they're a good and there are some women only sheds as well. So
oh really?
yeah. We've got one up in Whitby and various other places. Just why not?
I think this is one of the things I've said this before on here. And this is one of the things that the pandemic kind of shone a light on, is the fact that we are sociable creatures fundamentally, and we need each other. Even if we just need to be around each other. So you need to meet up, like you need to go to the pub, or you need to go wherever, you know, the gym or wherever you want to go. And when we were all locked away, that was taken away from us. And I think that was one of the people's mental health just went through the floor because of that. So something like this, and on the other side of it as well, a lot of men are that we have that insecurity as well. Like we don't want to feel weak and vulnerable. So something like, you know, going to when someone says, oh, look, there's this thing called men's sheds, I think you should go and go, oh, I'm not an old fogey. Why am I going to that? Only old men go to sheds.
Yeah.
And so I imagine there's a lot of that as well. And then when you get there, like you said, it's not what it sounds like.
We have a problem. I say we because I'm involved with the UK Men's Sheds Association.
Mm.
Obviously, if we're talking to, I don't know, health professionals or whatever, we'll talk about isolation, loneliness, and this, that, and the other. But of course, when we're trying to recruit people for sheds, you don't sort of say, you're lonely, come to our shed. What you say is, do you want to have fun and make friends? And that's a much more attractive proposition.
Yes.
And years ago, I was driving the president of the Australian Men's Sheds Association. I drove him around Bedfordshire to take him around various sheds because he was visiting. And he told me amazing things. But one of the things he said was, if you take a health professional into a shed, they see all the health education going on. If you take an adult educator in, they see all the learning that's going on. And if you take a community development worker in, they see all the community building that's going on.
Right,
so
yeah.
It ticks boxes for so many things. And the shed is merely the vehicle for getting people together when all these great things happen. But I think the other thing about it is you don't want men to be isolated within a shed.
No.
Because it's almost as bad because they're sort of tucked away. And what they say from Australia is the ideal shed is one third of the time spent on people doing their own projects. So they're things they might have done at home, but they're doing them in the shed because it's good to share with other people. The other is doing things to earn money, which is maybe making stuff that you can sell or possibly putting on training courses in wood turning and stuff like that.
Okay.
And the third one is community projects. So that's about getting out of your shed and connecting with the local community.
Yeah.
Down in Hemel, we sort of refurbished some kids' play equipment for a local sort of children's centre. And again, it's this sort of intergenerational stuff, but actually connecting with the community more widely rather than just getting lumped away in a building or something like that. I think is a far healthier way to go. And the other thing I think is, I mean, for me, my personal well-being is by creating something I'm proud of. And that could be cooking a meal. It could be gardening. In my case, it's writing. But if at the end of the day you say, this may not be wonderful, but I'm really pleased with it.
Yeah.
I think that really helps us. And I think men's sheds help people to be more creative because they're not only, you know, it's not just about woodwork and stuff. It can be any sorts of ways. And I think at the end, it's purposeful activity. So at the end of the day, you can say, I'm really proud of that, even if it's crap, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, like you were saying about losing your standing in the community, like once you retire.
Yeah.
You have nowhere to be. That was something else as well with the thing that went on with the COVID thing. Is that like we weren't needed anywhere. We didn't have to be anywhere, and we weren't needed anywhere. We all kind of lost our positions, our standing. We were kind of, you know. And it's not you want to be needed. You want to be, you know. You're like you say. Once you lose your uniform and your position, you kind of, and that's what happens with a lot of men. Like you said, when they retire, suddenly it's like, you're not needed anymore.
Yeah.
You're at home all the time, so your partner's got the arse because you're just kicking around. You're
like, getting in the way.
Yeah. And then you kind of, what do you do? So I think it's great to prepare for that.
Yeah.
You know? It's really important because we need to be needed and we want to be wanted somewhere. And when we don't have that, that's when, like you say, we deteriorate.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, as I say, it takes all sorts. So a guy we had coming to us, because you obviously nobody knows whether it's going to work out for them when they first come. And he came in and we were going to get some fleeces for ourselves, matching fleeces, just to feel part of a team, you know, because it helps. And so I said to this guy, I said, what's your size? He said, I don't want a fleece. So I said, why not? He said, well, I don't know I'm going to stay. So I said, oh, that's a shame. So anyway, we had a photo taken with us all in our new fleeces. And I said to this guy, I said, John, you may not be staying, but you've got to put a fleece on. So he said, okay, it's medium, so whatever. And that was the first time I knew that he was thinking of staying.
Yeah.
And he said, I don't feel as though I'm very useful here. And I said, first of all, I bet you are useful here. And secondly, it doesn't matter whether you're useful or not. You know, and you know, people bring out different things, and it's often you don't know, you think you know them quite well, and then they suddenly come out with this skill that they've never talked about, whatever. So, I describe it the magic of men's sheds because you can't actually engineer it. You know, it happens, and it happens more often than it doesn't happen. but you can't. So like, I don't know if you know, but men are a hard to reach, older men are a hard to reach group. And so if you are offering something like training, everybody who puts on training courses, they're all putting their hands up to pay for it. So they can tick a box that says we've provided training for older men. And similarly with health education, everybody wants to be able to reach older men because they're a hard to reach group. So sometimes they say, oh, can we send a district nurse in to talk about prostate problems? And we say, no, you cannot, because the last thing men want to be do is to be told about what to do and what about their health and sort of thing. So we, I mean, it's not an original phrase, but we call it health by stealth,
right?
Which is to actually raise the issues in much more subtle ways. And you start talking about having trouble peeing at night, and then somebody says, oh, you do as well, do you? Because they think they're the only person in the bloody world who has trouble peeing at night.
This is it, yeah.
And it gradually comes out. So yeah, but you can't engineer it. It has to sort of happen organically.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's too easy to paint a picture as sheds are the answer, because sometimes it doesn't work out.
No.
And you get people who are arguing, and you say, well, that's life. Sorry. You know.
Yeah.
Some people won't get on. Some people are awkward buggers. Some people, whatever. But that's, welcome to the real world sort of thing.
Yeah, this is it. Yes. Unfortunately, we are human beings, and we can be tricky customers sometimes, can't we?
Yeah.
And, you know, and then as well, because there's probably stuff that we're not dealing with subconsciously, or something that's happened from years ago, and it's still troubling you. And so when you're in an environment like that, it's still affecting you. It affects them. So you're maybe taking it out on the people around you. And so that's what, you know, men do need to kind of, we do. I always say, like, the best thing that I ever did was counselling. Just to go and get someone else to just help me unpack everything in my head, and then figure out why I was behaving in certain ways, why I was depressed, why I was a bit pissed off, and it really helped. And I think that will help people as well. I mean, I say my dad's 76 now. I mean, he's a bit too. He's still, you know, if I said to him, you should go to counselling, he'd go, well, what's the point? I'm going to be dead soon. I'm like, all right, Dad.
Yeah.
You know,
we might get to a shed though.
Yeah. We might get into a shed. Well, that's the thing. He's got. Well, that's the thing as well, is that he has got his own sheds.
Oh yeah.
And you know, they're full of stuff, and you know, he's always messing around in there.
Yeah, but we get a lot of people. Well, we get a lot of donations of tools and stuff, because you get some. It's usually the woman who survives the man. And she's literally got a shed load of tools. and the idea that they're going to get on and be appreciated and used. But sometimes we get people, older guys who are going into care or into a care home or into a sheltered accommodation. And the shed they used to go to, they can't have it. So they donate their tools to the shed, to the communal shed.
Right.
And then they can come in and use them.
Oh, brilliant.
So they use it. They're keeping familiar with the tools, but they're being used more widely.
Oh,
so it's a really
amazing.
Nice way they can sort of make that transition into more sheltered accommodation without losing touch with all the stuff and whatever.
Oh, so, that's lovely, that is.
Yeah. It's absolutely, it's great.
That's really, it's funny when, because my grandma ended up, she's in a care home now. And she's got the bare minimum, like, things around her, you know. And it suddenly made me realise, like, we're surrounded by all these things now, but as we get older, and you become less able, and you don't need all this stuff, and it starts to. And I'm really glad to hear that something like that, something that was important to these people, is actually going on to be used, and not and they still get to use it as well.
I think that's
fantastic.
Yeah. It's great.
My
view, I'm biased, of course, which is that every community should have a shed, because everybody I've spoken to, and again, it's mainly women, they know somebody who could benefit from a shed. And if you grow them bottom up around the interests of your sort of core group of men to get it started, then first of all, it's cheaper, and because you don't have to pay anybody to run it.
Yeah.
And secondly, because it's around their particular interests, and because they've done it for themselves, then it's a much more sort of, the bottom up, they've invested more in it. So they're like more likely to create something they want, and B, they're more likely to stick with it because they know all the efforts have gone into setting it up.
Yeah.
And so the old bottom up, you know, is really the way to go.
Yeah.
And as I say, you know, finding space really is the biggest problem for most sheds. But even if somebody's got a garage, they can start there. And somebody said to me, he said, a shed starts when guys get round a table to discuss what they're going to do.
Yeah.
So it's the talking and the chatting and the making friends. That's when the shed starts. And so it doesn't even theoretically, it doesn't even need to be sort of a physical space. It could be meeting in the pub every week to discuss this shed that never gets started. but nevertheless, you're talking about starting it.
Which is the point of the shed in the first place.
Which is the point, yeah, just getting talking. So the planning is as important as anything else. Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
you seem like somebody you seem very open about, you know, about your own experiences. Yeah. And I find that really refreshing. You know, you're not much older than I am, but... you know, there's still that element of our sort of generations that aren't very open about the things they've experienced. And I think it's fantastic that you seem very open. Has that been an easy thing for you? Have you always been that way?
No, I think I've got more open. I had depression and anxiety periods for over 20 years, but I've sort of from 40 to 60, I had a 20-year period of depression and anxiety. And I think that, I mean, you mentioned about counselling and things like that. I think that it's quite self-indulgent, but it encourages us to talk and to get things out. And I suppose I'm sort of putting back into an informal system that, you know, supported me in the past sort of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's purely coincidental, but it's sort of about 6 years since I've last sort of had depression and anxiety. And all that time I've been involved in sheds in one way or another. Yeah. It's too easy to say that the sheds, you know, was my salvation, but it is true, and it sounds a bit overdramatic, which is that some sheds have had people who've said that if they hadn't joined the shed, they would have taken their own lives. And so it's the sad thing is that it's sometimes people discover sheds by accident, you know.
Yeah, well, this is
and you think, what if they didn't find it, sort of thing, you know?
Yeah.
So we've got a role to try and publicise it as well as we can. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Well, this is like this podcast. The amount of messages we get from people just saying, just hearing, say for instance, you and I talking like this. All it took was them to hear. Us talking in this way, and we get messages from people going, I'm really glad that I could hear someone else talking about these things. I'm an older man myself, and blah blah blah, and you know, just that, and that's all you need. And so, like, you've the brilliant thing, like you said, you're putting back into this informal informal thing that we're doing. It's like with the podcast, it's the same thing. It's that I was helped by what I did. Now I can hopefully pass that on to other people. And I think that's what we all should be doing if we're in that position.
Yeah. I mean, I do believe, you know, that what the reason I'm now involved with the UK, the National Association, is because when I started the repair shed, I was really interested in a thing called social enterprise, which is generating income. And so I put a thing out there to the existing sheds, and at the time there were far fewer. We've got 1,000 either in existence or 200 of those in development, but there were far fewer then. And I put my request out to the sheds that existed as to why how they earned money, or did they earn money, and I got about half a dozen people come back, including a guy who gave me his whole business plan. And I thought, wow, they don't know me at all, but they're prepared to sort of send me all this stuff, give me an hour on the phone and things. So at the time I thought, well, I'm going to put my energies into setting up the shed now, but later on I'll try and put back into it by helping other people setting up sheds. And you know, right now in Hertfordshire, we've got two or three sheds already, but there are two more people who are setting them up now. And, you know, as I say, the more there can be, the better.
Yeah.
But the more local they are, it means people don't have to travel. It means people can meet up around other things rather than just going to the shed.
Yeah.
Like that. So there's as many more possibilities if you can have a reasonably local network. Yeah.
Yeah. And do people, like you were talking about projects? So are there projects there that the people running the shed bring in, or do you get other people bring stuff in? How does that work?
Well, it's, as I said, sometimes people bring their own little sort of pet projects in, and they're getting access to equipment that they haven't got in their own houses, or they haven't got space, or they haven't got the money. So obviously a shed, in theory, can afford to have better equipment. And as I say, we get lots of donations and things like that. So some people come in and they use that facility for their own thing. But more often than not, they sometimes get commissions and things like that. Bird boxes, they're the bane of my life, because every men's shed sooner or later makes bird boxes.
Yeah.
And over in Milton Keynes, they got an order from a wildlife trust for 130 bird boxes. And that's good for business because we're going to be paid for them. But after about 15, the guys were saying, we don't want to bloody make 150 bird boxes. And they said, we left our job to get away from this sort of mass production sort of line.
Yeah, yeah.
But that wasn't too good. But what happened over in Aylsham, at Aylesbury, was that it was a really brilliant idea. When they were starting their shed, they said, right, it was November time. They said, everybody's going to do the same thing. We're going to make bird boxes, and we're going to sell them on a market stall at Christmas to raise money to start the shed.
Right.
So everybody was doing bits and pieces, part of this process. Some were made up into kits. Some were made up, some were in kits. And so it was good team building exercise. It was a good chance to work out who was good at what.
Yeah.
Because some people wanted to sell them on the stall but didn't want to make them, and other people didn't want to do the selling.
Right.
So they made about 50 bird boxes. They flogged them each for a fiver, which really wasn't the point, but they made 250 quid on the stall, and then they did their own thing afterwards. So I thought it was just a brilliant sort of team building exercise. Everybody was told what to do. And then after that, obviously you do your own thing and whatever. And as I say, quite a lot of repairs and things that people can do for other people.
Yeah.
And that's where it overlaps with repair cafes, which is, we used to have community repair events where people used to bring in stuff that was broken, and we used to try and fix it for them,
you know.
Nice. Simple as that. Yeah. And again, the satisfaction that older guys get when they've mended something, and the look of appreciation on somebody who thought they thought they were going to have to take it to the dump. It's an old favourite, a favourite sort of whatever, and to see it had life in it still. And that's all the reward that people need,
the gratitude,
not the money, because we do it for free. The gratitude of people who've suddenly seen their favourite item kept out of landfill. So it is about, you know, feeling valued, really, isn't it?
Oh, that is such feeling valued is exactly what we all need.
And as you
get, there is that thing that you feel as you're getting older, you feel like you're not as valued, you know, especially with society definitely. You know, the older you get, the more, you know, well, you're not producing as much as you used to, so we're going to push you out and bring in newer people. And
That
and it does affect you, and that's just such a great idea. So how many sheds have you got now?
We've got 800 are open. This is in the UK. 800 are open, and there's about 220 in development.
Wow.
But as I said, even when they're in development, they're starting to bring people together and whatever. And then if you multiply that up by the average shed, is we don't know for a fact, but it's probably got about 15 or 20 members.
Okay.
So if you multiply that up, but if you multiply up all the families who benefit from the older guys maybe being in the shed, the ripple effects. And sometimes, of course, men come into the shed for respite care because they're full-time carers for their partners.
And
they actually want to get away from their partners and to come into the shed just to have a bit of playtime, really. That's what it is, playtime. And I think, you know, I think adults don't play enough.
No, you're right. So, you're absolutely right.
So we might as well go into a shed and have it like the nursery I talked about earlier, where you find all these toys and have all this fun and games and things like that.
Well, I think that's it. I mean, I might have said this before, but men never really grow up, do we? We just, our toys become more expensive.
Absolutely.
And that's, I think that's
permission to play.
I love it. And it's but there is that kind of, like I said earlier, when you mention the word shed, because I always associate it with old people.
So
I will say that with myself, I would be like, yeah, but I'm only 50. Why would I go to a shed? That's my own bullshit coming out, you know. But we need to get past that.
Yeah. But it is interesting that when this guy came over from Australia, he told me that in Australia the sheds are very much open, 18 to 80 plus, you know. Mm. But he said the actual median age of a shedder in Australia is 69. So even though they advertise equally to everybody, 18 to 80, there's still that particular age group.
Yeah.
And the other thing that he surprised him, he said when sheds started, he thought they'd all be brewing. Well, in Australia, they'd all be brewing and stuff. But he said it's not, you know, they can brew beer and stuff if they want to. But he said incredibly few sheds do brew beer. But, you know, I don't know. A bit like the Archers, you know,
with the
cider press and stuff, you know, cider club or whatever.
Well, there's things, I've got a friend of mine, Emma. And I've known her, I don't know, must know about 10 or so years. And she's only just turned 40. And I met with her a little while ago, a couple of weeks ago, and she was saying, I've got my allotment. I love my allotment. And she was showing me all these pictures of her, like she's cleaned all this, like it was the back of the allotment and all these shit bushes and she's cleaning all that and showing me. And I just went, but you go out all the time and have parties and things like that. What's this allotment stuff you're doing? That's happening as well. A lot of younger people are getting allotments now.
Yeah, yeah. They suddenly realise that you don't have to wait.
Yeah.
You don't have to wait. You might as well enjoy it while you're fit enough to enjoy it.
Well, but I still have an issue. It's my, and it's my own, like I say, it's my own rubbish.
Yeah.
I just can't physically say, I'm going to get myself a shed. I'm going to get myself an allotment because I feel like I'm giving up, but that's not the case, is it at all?
Well, it needn't be. No, it can be a new, new stuff.
Yeah.
Piece of life. Because somebody ages ago, she used to say, you know, we use this phrase growing old, but actually traditionally people don't see it as a growing part of our life. Whereas when I meet people who are coming to retirement, I say, what are you going to do for the last third of your life? And they're thinking, bloody hell, have I really got to live for another 30 years? And, of course, the answer is more and more people are living.
Yeah.
So I think the other thing is, I think I discovered it with a friend of mine here, which was that he retired early and he had too much time to think. And he got worried about the smallest little things. And he's now busy doing other things, doing volunteering and stuff. He's not in a shed, but he's doing other things and he's keeping busy. And quite soon afterwards, after he was bothering about tiny little things, he stopped worrying about them.
Yeah.
Because he didn't have time to think about them. And, you know, did I lock the back door and things like that, you know?
Yeah.
And it doesn't take long for people's brains to sort of scale down a bit and whatever. To sort of, you know, and even the guys who come into the shed, they sort of say, you can only watch daytime TV for so long before it really does, you know, get you.
Yeah.
And as I say, once they've discovered the shed, they sort of think, well, why didn't I know about this years ago? Because they've been sort of going downhill and suddenly they sort of pick up and discover, you know, discover a new place they can go to.
Yeah. Do you advertise this? Is it easy to find?
Yeah. We put out publicity wherever we can. I mean, there's always people who are, you get sort of idealistic about it. You think that everybody at every bus stop should know about men's sheds. And you take it as a personal affront that the fact they don't. But of course, like, you know, life's more complicated than that.
Yeah.
And the other thing is you've got to find the right people to start it because sometimes people put out publicity to find out if anybody's locally interested in a men's shed. And the trouble is that people turn up expecting to find a ready-made shed. And then they're told, well, no, actually, you've got to set it up. And, of course, the setting up part of it is the boring bit. That's all the insurance and this, that, and the other. So they go public too early because if you've been told you can walk, if you think you can walk into a shed the following week and it's like 12 months later it's open, then you've actually, your expectations have been raised and then they've been dashed. But for my mind, you don't go public too early. You find four or five guys who understand what setting it up is likely to be about, looking for premises, getting insurance, doing all the boring bits. And once it's up and running, then you go public to say, come on, the doors are open and things like that. So getting the publicity is right And as I said before, part of it is getting the publicity right with the health professionals.
Yeah.
And part is getting it right with the guys who are going to come in. Part of our problem is, have you heard about this thing called social prescribing?
No.
It's a very old idea, but the idea is that you go to the doctors and they prescribe going to a knitting club or going, or it might be going to a men's shed. But the problem is that men's sheds are getting used as dumping grounds for anybody and everybody with disability and aging and dementia and stuff. And the guys that come along to a shed, apart from the fact that they may have dementia themselves, they sort of say, well, as somebody put it, they're caring, but they're not carers. Right. So they don't come along to a shed to be carers. Yes, they'll obviously support each other.
Yeah.
But they're not trained. They're not professional carers.
No.
If somebody has a carer, then it's not a question of the carer leaving them there. It's a question of the carer coming and staying with them.
Yeah, of course.
And then that's fine, sort of thing. So, yeah. So we need to be quite careful because it is the magic that happens. But we just need to know our limitations. Otherwise, we get put in positions of having to provide professional facilities when the people who go there don't claim to be professionals.
Of course. Yeah.
It's certainly something that we think. We think we could easily have 2,000 sheds, because you look at the numbers of sort of like British Legion clubs and things like that, or scout groups and things like that, or Women's Institute. I can't remember how many women's institutes there are, but there's still plenty of scope for us to expand.
Where can people find, if they want to come down to a shed, how can they find where they
are? Well, there's the men's shed website is mensheds.org.uk. But if you put in find a shed, it'll take you to a map that we've got on our website.
Right.
And you put your postcode in and you can find out where your nearest shed is. So that's the best way to find out. And if people are thinking of starting sheds, the best thing they can do is to go on a shed crawl, which is what I did when I was setting up. And that idea comes from Ireland, where they're far more advanced with their sheds in Ireland than they are here. And basically, you get a minibus and you fill it up half with people who have a professional interest in sheds and half the people who have a personal interest in sheds.
Okay.
And you take them around three or four sheds. And then after you've been round, you're not looking at a blank sheet of paper because you're all saying, oh, that was a good idea, or I don't like that, or, oh, they were doing that, whatever. So it just and to see a shed in action is really what it's infectious. Yeah. You just sort of think, why haven't we got one of these? And sheds are only too happy to show off what they've achieved, so they won't mind. They won't mind anybody visiting, which is the best single way to find out what they're all about.
Yeah,
is to go into one and see what goes on there. Yeah, yeah.
That's brilliant. And I'm going to come down. I know we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
I'm going to come to one. I'm going to have a look because I'm interested. Yeah. I'd love to see it in action.
Yeah, brilliant.
It's so important. Like you said, you touched on earlier.
Yeah.
This sounds overly dramatic, but you are saving lives. You really are, by giving some people a place to go and be with other people. It's so important.
But I think the other point is it's fun.
Yeah.
above all, that's the biggest attraction, that you have fun there.
Chris, thank you so much, mate. This has been an absolute joy.
Nice to chat.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.